the bank.
Hey, Brett.
Hey, Ange.
How's it going today?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm pretty good as well. You know why I feel really good? Like, most days?
You feel good every day.
So. I feel good almost every day, but one of the reasons is I don't have any debt.
No.
Well, I have a mortgage, but, you know, that debt kind of takes a little bit longer, and, you know, with a mortgage, I feel like if I really needed to in a bind, I could sell my house, mm-hmm. pay it off, and we could move somewhere and rent, right, if we wanted to. But I don't have any pesky mortgage, you know, any debt hanging around. So could you guess how much the average American owes on their credit card?
I don't know, maybe a couple $1,000s?
Yeah, no, so actually the average American is about $17,000.
$17,000?
$17,000. Okay. So, you know, I would say that that's a car, you know, a really good car. You could get a good car for that. You could get a nice down payment for a house for that. Gosh, you could take several really nice vacations for that. You could do a lot for that. So that, yeah, that kind of surprised me too. But, so then, what about, so that's just credit cards. What about auto loans? How much do you think the average American owes on an auto loan today?
So if you're getting a car that's like $25,000 minimum, probably, you know, like half of that still remaining on average. So somewhere like in the $15,000 range.
Yeah. So the average American actually still owes $29,500.
29 more than my estimate for what the car should have cost for a reasonable car.
Well, and wow. So this is for a household. So there might be people that have two cars on this. But you know, I think it's kind of still a huge number for me because I'm like, gosh, for that amount of money, you could get two really nice cars. You could get three really nice cars, right? You know, I actually saw a car the other day for sale with like 7,000 miles on it for $12,000. So you could get like a Honda Civic, right? And for way less than that. So that number was kind of shocking to me too, especially since, you know, I had a car loan and I was like, once this goes away, I refuse to ever have one again, you know, and I paid it off. And so the fact that people would kind of sign up for that again, and, you know, I think what's common is a lot of people get a car and they pay it off. And once they're done making payments, it's time for them to get a new car.
Right. It's like the built-in timeline for the end of life of the car. As soon as they're done with the payments, they say, this is what the arrangement was for the life of this vehicle. Dump that off while I can still get some money for it and then pick up my new car and start the process over again. When in reality, that's probably the worst time to make that choice, right? Or the worst thing you can do in that scenario because you're getting rid of all that extra value that that car is having. You paid on all the depreciation that fell off the car immediately as soon as you drove it off the lot. And you know, then you're starting the whole process over again.
Yeah, and you know, it took me a long time to kind of get this, but cars are really a depreciating asset. Every day that you own a car, it's worth less than the day before, right? Mm-hmm. Except some very weird collector car cases where you're driving a Mustang from the 60s, right? But that's not really what we're...
hold on to that muscle car for 40 years and eventually it pays off.
Yeah, you know, that's not really what we're discussing here. But in you know, for most people, every day your car is worth less than the day before. And so I've kind of learned, like, the best thing I can do is drive my car into the ground. Mm-hmm. There is no, like, value in me getting rid of a perfectly good car to buy a more expensive, different car, right?
For that nominal value that you would get for like a trade-in or anything, right? It's not that good of a deal.
Right.
When you look at how much value is actually left in your car, the dealership knows this. That's why they're going to pay you for the car because they know they can get more for it. It's worth more overall, right? And so that's why it's actually advantageous for you to be looking for cars in that range.
Yeah.
Ideally not through the dealership because they're taking that extra cut off the top and you know, that's where your winnings are going to come from for the life of that vehicle is at the end of life, not so much in the beginning.
And you know, I will also say that part of the reason I think this number is so high is America kind of has this like unrealistic standard of what size car you need. So in general, when we travel abroad, we see much smaller vehicles on the road. And then when we travel around here, it is like trucks, it is SUVs. It's like, oh, you have a kid, you obviously need a Suburban XL to haul this infant, right? And it's been this like kind of like crazy cultural shift almost to everybody's getting these like big Soccer Mom trucks now.
That's what, right? We see all over the place. I mean, the Ford Escape, I think, is the, you know, the most common vehicle that I see around here. And then if you go one neighborhood over, it's like Escalades and, you know, Chevy Tahoes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Right? It's still normal. And you thought, you know, with the gas craze, people were downsizing during that time frame. People were scared of those vehicles. They were trying to offload them. And nobody wanted them because, you know, they didn't want to pay for, you know, the gas guzzler, right? Quote, unquote. Right. But now since the gas prices have come back down again, because now they're, where we live, they're about 2.5 instead of where they were up over 4 at one point per gallon, then... you know, people don't care anymore.
Yeah.
So, and if the gas prices spike up again, then people are going to start caring again.
And, you know, it also seems like I find people who justify their vehicle choice based on 1% of the year. So they're like, oh, well, I go camping in the summer and it's easier to have this truck. And I'm like, you could rent a truck, you know, or they're like, well, I haul things, right? That's what everybody with a truck says. And it's like, well, did you know you can rent, you know, a truck from Home Depot for, you know, this much money? And it's actually way more economical to rent the larger vehicle when you need it and drive a smaller vehicle. And I think from a user experience, like if 90% of your day is, or 90% of your time in the car is commuting to your 9-to-5, like, are you kidding me? Like, you could get by doing it in a smart car, right? Like the smallest vehicle we have here.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of times people are buying, they're upsell, right? You go to the dealer and they're like, oh, but for an extra $50 a month on your payment, you can get into this. And, you know, I think you need to realize, like, instead of being like, what is it monthly? What is that dollar amount over a 5-year loan?
Right.
Because when you see thousands of dollars versus $50, you might like question that a little bit more.
Right. Or you can say, is that a $5,000 feature? Right.
Right.
And if the answer is no, even if you might want it, it's, if it's only worth like $400 to you and your perceived value of that feature, it's not worth it overall.
Right.
And
you know, I think a lot of people, and this is something I kind of learned, you know, I thought getting a car would make me, right, keeping up with the Joneses, getting that car would make me happier. I remember I really wanted a Lexus after I started working, and I had paid off my other car. I could have traded it in, and I could have afforded it, but I made the decision to not buy it. Mm-hmm. And fast forward, you know, 3 years, I never once have felt like I've missed out because I'm not driving a Lexus. And I actually feel like I've been able to do some really cool things financially because I didn't make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways.
Because we got as far as like going into the dealership, taking a look at it, getting some mm-hmm. of the material, you know, talking to people about it. And it was just not the right thing to do. We waited on it. We paused on it. We're like, is this a good deal in the first place? Is, yeah, this would be a nice thing to have, but it doesn't make economic sense, right? It's just, it was too expensive for what it was in comparison with the rest of the market.
And, you know, I think that's really important, that word you said right there, we paused on it. Because truly, like, I am definitely somebody who, it's very easy to get swept away in all these features, right? Like when you're sitting in the Lexus and it has like the, you know, red stitching that you've always wanted, and then they're like having you drive it and play with the features and like selling you on it, you're like, oh my gosh, like, yeah, how have I ever lived without this, right? But we did hit pause and I resumed and I went back to, you know, commuting to work in my normal vehicle. And I was like, wait, like, I'm still getting to and from work. My vehicle only has 30,000 miles on it. You know, like, what was I thinking? So I think it's really important when you feel like you're in the heat of the moment, hit pause, go home. And if you still are like, yes, this makes sense for me and my family, then by all means, hit play again. But sometimes you hit that eject button and you're like, woo, didn't have to sit through that terrible movie, you know?
Well, especially because whose advantage is it to the day of buying the item the day of? It's not yours, right? If you buy it on the spot, it's to the salesman advantage. He's trying to get you to buy it on the spot. He may not be saying that directly, but he's going to be like, you know, this is going to be gone soon. It's running out of season. We're having a special promotion today, right? There's a reason like all these industries are multi-billion dollar industries for this type of sales, because the buy it now mentality is what makes them all the money, right? So if you take that power back and say, hey, I'm going to keep the power here, and I'm going to decide when I want this, and you're going to give me the deal that I want when I want it, right? What are they going to do about it, right? They're not going to take it away, right? They're just going to be like, okay, yeah, if you want it at some point, I need to make the sale, whether it's today or next week, right? They're going to honor that probably.
Exactly. All right, so I have one more statistic for you. So how much do you think the average household still owes on student loan debts? Now, keep in mind, this is the average American household in general across all ages. So not we're not just concentrating on 20 to 30-year-olds.
Okay, so everybody overall, how per household again?
Per household.
Per household. Most people graduating today have, you know, $50,000 in debt, 40, 60, something in there. So if you take a little bit less than that, maybe that's like sub 40, 30, 38.
38. So $50,000.
All right. So that's not as high. Yeah, I wasn't as far off that time as I was in the
Other ones, but. And I think, again, you were kind of thinking one. So this is, because both people might have the debt, you know, all that.
Yeah. Two families together. Yeah. There you go. That makes sense.
So,
or two people.
So, you know, this is another one. This was actually our very first episode that we talked about my story with paying off student loan debt, and your unique approach to going through college, staying at home with your parents so that you could afford tuition yourself, and kind of making those decisions. So if you've never listened to that episode, I encourage you to go back and listen to it because we really do a deep dive there. But I guess here, you know, I would say the biggest thing with student loan debt is you can't get rid of them. You have no asset. So, you know, a car, I've talked to some people where I'm like, yep, you bought this car a year ago. You couldn't afford it to get it then. You can't afford it now. Sell it, right? Stop the bleeding. A house you can sell. You can usually get most of your money out of it, unless we're talking about the housing crash, right? But student loans are hard because your asset is your education. So this is kind of where I always tell people, you know, when you pick a major, and it's hard because you're a kid, but when you're going through high school and picking a major, you should try to pick one that you know has a payoff. Because if you're not getting paid fairly for what it costs you to get that diploma, then there's a mismatch, right? But if you have this debt, there's nothing you can do about that now. So I just encourage people to focus on this one and pay this one off first. Now, there's a lot of debt strategies out there. Dave Ramsey says, line them up from smallest to largest and focus on the smallest ones so you get that momentum. A lot of people say focus on the highest interest. You know, I will say if you have credit card debt that is, you know, over 10%, you should probably pay that off before your student loans.
And many are 24%.
Right? Yeah.
So that's way really, really dangerous debt.
Yeah. So I guess like credit cards are your hair is burning. Your hair is on fire. You need to pay that off very first. But after that, between auto and, you know, mortgage and student loans, tackle those student loans. Get rid of them. I know, you know, there's different government programs out there now saying after 20 years, if you've been paying this, we might, maybe, could possibly pay them off. I personally wouldn't bank on that.
Right. Those programs have only been around for a couple of years. Nobody's even close to getting a payout from that. You know, the legislation could change at any time. It's extremely risky, right? So go down that path if you want to. We know people in our you know, inner circle here that people are going down that path and have large amounts of debt that are part of that calculation. They're just thinking it's all going to go away. And maybe it will, but that is a huge risk that I wouldn't take on, right? I don't trust the government enough to think that that's actually going to take place, because when all these people are ready to cash this in, you know, our entire GDP would go out the window to pay off college debt. I just don't see that happening.
And I will say, you know, there's two different programs. There's one that's for like social programs, like teachers, and that one has a 10-year window. And those actually started being paid back this year.
Mm-hmm.
People qualified. So if you're on that path, like, we're not trying to scare you and saying this is all going away. You know, I think that program is pretty solid. That seems to be kind of a pillar in this, you know, and that's part of your compensation because you're taking a state job or a government job. And that's part of your compensation package, really, you know, because they're factoring this in as you are getting paid less. You know, I know a lot of lawyers who go into public service, they get paid less, and one of their benefits is getting these loans paid back. Mm-hmm. That is very different. But there's other programs out there now that are like, you know, more geared towards pay this much and it'll get repaid. And those are the ones that I think with the administration changing so much in America, like that is definitely on the chopping block. And whether it stays or not, we are definitely not experts. Do not take our word for this one way or the other. But personally, I made the choice to definitely just like pay off my student loans as fast as possible. Because I had 6.8% interest. That was really high. That's higher than my mortgage. That's higher than my auto loan. And there was no asset backing that. There was nothing that if I lost my job tomorrow, I could sell, you know, besides my skill set to pay that back. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted it out of my life.
Yeah, because I mean, best case scenario there, it does get paid off. Then you have all the money that you would have spent paying it off, right, to be able to invest in something optimally now. So if you're, if you're best case scenario, you take all that money you would have invested there, you do something great with it, it can be beneficial. But probably most people aren't doing that anyway.
Yeah.
They're probably just, you know, doing whatever. That money's going to disappear. And then come due, if the loan, you know, doesn't get paid off by the government and they're like, hey, you have to start paying on this and pay it down. Now you're just 10 to 20 years down the line and you don't have the money to start paying on it. You're starting from if you were 20 years old paying on it. You won't be done paying that off until after you're 60 plus, right?
Right. Or more. Which is going to throw off retirement strategies.
Oh, yeah. It's
going to
destroy your retirement. So that's why it's such a, that's why I say it's such a big risk for me that I wouldn't take on, because, you know, that's, do I want to just like gamble that I'm going to, you know, have a, get $1,000 paid, you know, paid to me in the future, or that I'm going to have to pay like $1,000 plus plus all that interest when I'm not prepared to do that.
And so I, you know, I think you brought up a really good point, and a really good strategy is to figure out, okay, if, you know, I'm paying the interest only when I am 20, or in 20 years, I still owe $50,000. How much do I need to put away every month and put into a mutual fund to have $50,000 in 20 years, right? Because then you can get the benefit of the doublers. Mm-hmm. So you can double your money every 10 years, typically by investing in the stock market, not guaranteed. So you could, yeah, you know, that's a great solution too, because then if these programs are still around, it's paid off. Basically, you feel like you won the jackpot and you just have like, right, your loans got paid off and you have $50,000.
And you saved all the money anyway.
So then, you know, it gives you a lot of flexibility to either retire early, you know, upgrade your house, or, you know, whatever, buy that truck, right, or whatever you need to do. But it gives you that power back. So I would definitely back a strategy like that versus like living paycheck to paycheck and crossing your fingers and hoping for the best, right?
If you're going to go for it, throw it into a mutual fund, earmark the money for that. Don't spend it on anything else. And if you get the bonus at the end of the day, then you do, great. If not, you won't be in trouble because you already planned for it.
Yeah. And so, you know, when I talk about paying off all this debt, I know it's really intimidating to a lot of people. These are big numbers, right? I mean, if you add this up, you got 20 for the credit card debt, 30 for the auto, that's 50, plus your student loans are 50. So you're at $100,000. That's scary. That's huge.
Average. Yeah.
These are huge numbers, right? But I would say if you can start anywhere, just start paying it down, you will make progress very quickly. And then someday when it's all paid off, whether it's 5 years out, 10 years out, 20 years out, you will have this new appreciation for never, ever getting into debt again. Right? Because I didn't even have it this bad. My total debt that I've paid off in my life is $40,000, but I will never get into debt again, besides the mortgage, right?
Right. And so, and that's a good point. People that are mostly successful in their financial path, they don't have a lot of debt or have no debt. And once they're out of debt, or if they have accrued any debt in their life, they never have it again. Unless they specifically choose to leverage debt for financial gain, because they know how to do that, right? And if you don't know how to do that right now, that does not mean having a car loan is leveraging your debt and is somehow making you more money, right? That's not what we're talking about. You know, we're talking about, you know, when we're talking about investment properties and things like that, mm-hmm. we're leveraging a certain amount of debt that we are purposely going after, because by doing that, we are making more money over the long run,
right?
Right? So there's a reason that we're doing that, right? So playing off of that. That's where we'd only see debt again. Yeah, once we would get, like, our personal house mortgage paid off, like, we don't want that, right? We don't want that again. That's not doing us any favors, because this house isn't making us any more money like our investment properties would be.
Correct. Yeah, and that's a really good point. You know, it's not like I'm anti-debt. It's not like I don't think there's a place for it. But it's, if you aren't thinking about all the consequences that come along with it, or if you're not doing it strategically as part of your, like, I mean, that's our business plan, right? That we have, like, spent a lot of time crafting. Mm-hmm. Then I don't recommend getting it. You know, for the average consumer that currently is $100,000 in debt, I would not tell you to go get a rental property.
Definitely not.
Because
you have to get back to zero, and you have to be a savvy investor in order to even go down this path, right?
Right.
So everybody should be trying to get to zero for the average Joe.
Yeah. And, you know, I would... And I know it's intimidating, but, like, you know, and this is where we've talked about a lot, but it's really the snowball effect. Like, it seems intimidating, and we preach all the time about cutting these things out, and people are like, oh, you're going after my coffee, right? always go after your coffee. I'm sorry. We go after your cable, right? We don't think you should have cable. I'll go after anything. I'm ruthless. When I help people with their budgets, I surprise people because everybody thinks, like, there's no room in my budget. And then I'm like, all right, I just found, you know, 20% of your budget is fat that you could cut immediately. It's right. low-hanging fruit.
And sometimes, literally, sometimes, hey, you spent $100 on cookies last month.
Right.
Like, don't do that.
Yeah. But so once you start getting into that mindset, this debt will get paid off faster than anybody thinks, you know? And then, like I said, you know, it's that pain of getting out of it and digging out of it yourself. So, you know, I think everyone always looks for that magic bullet. And they're like, all right, maybe I'll start playing the lottery, right? And if I win... And then did you know that, like, most people who have won the lottery in their lifetimes are now bankrupt?
Oh, yeah. I've always, like, the horror stories of people winning the lottery is something that I've heard of before, right? Or, like, the families come out of the woodwork and they start, like, trying to leech off the person that wins the lottery. Or there's disputes over the tickets for, like, the work events that always, you know, put in on tickets together. Because my dad used to do that when he worked. Like, a bunch of guys would go in on lottery tickets when the Powerball got to some number or something, right? And then so they had all split it, right? Because they would all be able to retire if they all hit the jackpot, right? And you know, a lot of production workforces are like that. And yeah, I mean, you can buy Corvettes and buy things out and have, you know, all kinds of taxes that you have to pay on those lottery winnings also that people, you know, don't commonly think of. But yeah, that money can go so fast if you don't, like, put it away and pretend like you don't have it.
Exactly. So I always say more money, more problems, you know, it's a quote by me. No, I've worked with a lot of people and they seem to think, like, if I just had more money, I could make this happen. You know, I've even had friends tell me, and I'm helping them budget, well, it's just because you make more than me. And I was like, are you kidding me? You spend more than me every month. So income is not the problem. And I always tell people, until they get a grasp on their financial picture, having more money will just mean that you have more payments. It's amazing when you watch, you know, people that you know that start earning more money and you're like, okay, great. Like, now they're going to pay down this debt, right? And they go out and they buy a boat, right? I mean, or they buy a second home. I mean, this is, like, so common all the time, right? People, as soon as they earn more money, they inflate their lifestyle. And then it's always this chase of, like, owing more and more and never being happy. So I always say, like, pause, pay off what you have. And then you have the freedom to be like, do I want to get back into this hole, right? Like, is buying a boat worth it to me to go back into debt?
Mm-hmm.
But until you get to zero, you can't really ask yourself that question honestly, in my opinion.
Yeah, so, I mean, a common example that I talk to people about is, you know, I have two friends named Jim and John, and they both work together at the same company. Jim likes to, every time he gets a budget, he buys a new item or helps out his family or buys a boat or goes and buys the lake house, right? He constantly is living larger because he wants to be better than Tom, right? Or Jim and Tom, that's what. But Tom, you know, he saves that bonus every time. You know, he puts that away, he puts it into his mutual fund, he puts it back into his 401k. You know, he just continues going as he does. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't look at what his coworkers are doing. He doesn't care. He just goes to work and gets the paycheck and has a happy life, right? That he mm-hmm. that he constantly is doing. But it's all mental for Jim, right? He doesn't pride himself on what his accomplishments are. He prides himself on that he's doing better than other people around him.
Right.
Right. So, you know, about halfway through this race, Tom just disappears. He's no longer contested in this race. He doesn't care. He's retired.
Right.
And now Jim still has to work until he's over 65.
Right.
Right. If he's lucky, he gets to retire at
65. And so I guess, Brett, you just spoiled, like, the entire point of the podcast that I was hoping people would eventually figure out on their own. So we say we're a podcast for the average Joe, but my, like, ulterior motive with all of this was to help people retire early or help people retire, period, for some of our older listeners out there. Because how happy, you know, think about tomorrow, you wake up and you don't have to go into work ever again for the rest of your life. How does that make you feel?
Because you choose to. I mean, you can do whatever you want. You don't have to sit at home and hold on to your pennies and just say, I'm going to do this until I die, but I don't have to go to work.
Right.
You know, it's living a comfortable lifestyle after you retire at a super early age.
Right. And, you know, I read the book Millionaire Next Door, and mm-hmm. in that, they talked about how, you know, people that have this money, it's not that you don't do things, but it's having that F you money. It's having that power to be like, I don't agree, you know, and I've worked at places where I'm like, I just really don't agree with what's going on here. And it's having that power to be like, I no longer want to be part of this organization. Bye. Right? And you can go find another job. You don't have to stop working. You don't have to go home and not do anything. You know, for me, I really like what I do. So I go into work every day because I find it enjoyable. But deep down, I know, like, if I wanted to walk away tomorrow, I could. Mm-hmm. I could make it work on, you know, the rentals we have. And because I'm willing to live so frugally, I can get by on almost nothing, right? Mm-hmm. Knowing that makes me a happier person because I no longer, you know, you always talk to people and they're like, oh, working for the man, like, gotta go to my 9-to-5. It's the worst thing ever, right? And I go in and I'm like, it's not so bad, you know? Like, I'm the chipper person at the office that everybody wants to strangle.
But the key to that strategy and the reason you can do that is because you have no debt.
Right. Exactly. That's what I mean. Like, I, you know, what do I have to pay besides my mortgage, which, you know, quite honestly, our mortgage is low enough that I could just go get a minimum wage job if I needed to and keep the roof over our head.
Right.
So because I'm not in debt anymore, I'm not a slave to money. Money is a slave to me.
Right. Because we have chosen to not pay off our mortgage to invest in other properties. Correct. Because that is a smarter personal investment for us. There were more dollars there coming in from those investments than it would have been worth it for us to pay off that extra interest on the mortgage.
And faster. I would say it was probably about a year after we finished paying off my last debt that we stopped working for money and money started working for us. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing when money starts working for you because we get to do these cool rental opportunities. We have other investments, right? We don't just invest in real estate. We have other investments. And year after year, our little money dollar workers, like I always think of them as little people, are producing their own money now. And it's really cool. You know, I kind of think of real estate as our first child. And basically we have an 18-year-old that, well, we have two kids, right? We have two properties. They're already 18. They're already moved out into their own places and they're paying us a stipend. I mean, that's basically what it is. You know, we occasionally have to go over and help them with some projects around the house. And other than that, we're hands off.
Yep. We gave them a new sink the other day, so.
Yeah, upgraded that. And we installed it ourselves, which we talked about on a previous podcast too. And learning new skills. You know, I'm not somebody always comfortable with doing things like this, but the more you learn, the more you realize, like, it's not that hard.
Right, there's nothing complicated about it. It's just the, do you have the right tools to just spend an hour, you know, doing a little project like that? Nothing's complicated. It's a couple of bolts and a couple of screws and take it all apart and hook it all up again.
Right? Yeah.
Kids that play with Legos have a harder time, like, building complex things than some of the things in your house are.
Yeah. So just to kind of start wrapping this one up, you know, I would say if you're in debt now, it's tough. And you have a long road ahead of you, but it is a road worth staying on. Stay on track, get to zero, then decide if you want to go, you know, you can either, basically once you get to zero, you have a fork in the road. You can either kind of make a U-turn and get back into debt and know that you're, like, staying in the system of working for the man, getting debt, or you can choose to veer off towards, take the exit to financial freedom, right? And you can start making the money work for you instead of working for money.
Right.
And that's a really powerful thing. And I promise you, you know, if you're making a living wage in America, which maybe not everybody is, if you know, if you're making less money, your first task is to focus on making more money, right? Improving your skill set, making more money. But if you're making a decent wage, it's your expenses, man. You get those under control, almost everybody out there can get on the path to financial freedom.
Yep. But everybody still says, I need to make more money, no matter how much money they're making, right? That's not the problem. So at some point, you need to turn around, and it's probably what is that dollar amount that they need to turn around and say, nope, it's my expenses, right? It's not, I don't need to focus on my income as much as I need to focus on my
So expenses. It's a little bit hard to give a generic answer here because it depends. Do you have kids? Do you not have kids? Do you live in a high cost of living area? Do you live in a low cost of living area? I will say the median income for a household in America right now is $46,000 for a household. I think that is roughly a family of four.
That household, $46,000, but on average, that household has $100,000 in debt.
Plus a mortgage.
Plus the mortgage.
Yeah. So I will say, you know, $46,000. So if you're making more than that, consider yourself lucky, right? Unless, you know, if you're in a high cost of living area, then adjust up 20%, I think, is the standard adjustment rate, mm-hmm. if you're, like, in New York or San Francisco. So I would say if you're making over $50,000, then you can definitely achieve financial freedom if you make it a priority in your life. But that means that McDonald's and Starbucks and Outback are no longer your priorities.
Anything you've ever seen a commercial for, probably you don't need.
Right. All right. So thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Money in the Bank. If you liked it, please hit subscribe. We are on YouTube, iTunes, and Stitcher app. You can also find us on Google Play and pretty much anywhere podcasts are found these days. So we're everywhere. We're taking over. So tune in every week to stay on your path for financial freedom.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Money in the Bank. Make sure to subscribe to us on the iTunes or Stitcher app so that you get weekly alerts every time we post a podcast. Or if you want, you can visit my website, moneyinthebankpodcast.com. And if you want to reach out with any questions or further comments, please email me at angie@moneyinthebankpodcast.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Money in the Bank.